here on KGNU. Coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear from a CU Boulder professor whose recent article in The Nation magazine outlines how some very far-right political forces might take advantage of the current global COVID-19 pandemic. Then, if you're using the coronavirus crisis to evaluate your own health habits, a longtime Boulder naturopath would like to help you think outside the box in ways you view long-term wellness. We'll have more coming up. To round out today's Morning Magazine, we'll visit a Denver neighborhood who last night joined many others in howling at the moon to honor the frontline medical workers. At 8:30, Fiona Foster is your host for Connections. But first, the latest local headlines. The latest figures on the coronavirus show that 226 people have died from COVID-19. Officials yesterday say they expect the peak of cases to happen in May. On Thursday, Governor Jared Polis signed an executive order extending Colorado disaster emergency declaration for an additional 30 days. Lucy Haggard has more.
The initial declaration, signed on March 11th, was set to expire on Saturday, but now continues until early May. The extension gives the state access to more emergency funds in order to respond to the coronavirus pandemic. The state has confirmed over 5,000 cases since March 5th, though testing rates have stalled for the past week and a half due to shortages in supplies. Officials estimate that the state's actual infection rate may be as much as 10 times higher than the number of confirmed cases. In anticipation of more COVID-19-related infections and deaths, Colorado is repurposing buildings normally used for public events into makeshift hospitals. As the Denver Post reports, the state health department is preparing for the state's rate of new cases to peak in the coming weeks, and officials are concerned that there are not currently enough hospital beds, ventilators, or workers to manage the surge. The Army Corps of Engineers will begin construction Friday to convert the Colorado Convention Center and the Larimer County Fairground for patients who no longer require critical care but can't yet go home. The two facilities combined will hold about 3,000 patients. The projects are expected to finish by the end of the month. To add even more capacity for COVID-19 patients, three former medical facilities will be converted to provide care at a higher level than the Convention Center or the Larimer Fairgrounds. These sites are St. Anthony North in Westminster, St. Mary Corwin Medical Center in Pueblo, and Western Slope Memory Care in Grand Junction. Additionally, the state has ordered 10 refrigerator trucks to use as makeshift morgues as upcoming COVID-19 deaths may overwhelm existing morgues. For KGNU, I'm Lucy Haggard. You can find all of our coverage of the coronavirus pandemic, as well as resources and information to help you navigate it, at kgnu.org.
As the global pandemic puts politics on the back burner, questions are being raised about how to run a campaign respectfully during the pandemic, with voters more concerned about jobs and health. The Colorado Sun reports that after the month-long stay-at-home order that started March 26, some candidates are hosting discussions on Facebook with health care experts to answer audience questions. Another is collecting personal stories and playing piano to raise money for charity. Others are hosting online coffee chats, creating lists of community resources, releasing update public health plans, and where to turn for help with unemployment, small business loans, and groceries. And there are some candidates that feel it might be wrong to campaign and ask for help and money. Some pundits feel that current conditions favor incumbents and better-known candidates with more financial resources. But one campaign manager put it, "The only certainty in this election is that there are no certainties." Most campaigns sent their staffers and volunteers home and stopped all in-person campaigning, but the election is not going to be postponed as they try to get themselves on the June 30th ballot. And in today's weather, current temperatures in Boulder 46, Denver 48, and Fort Collins 38, and up in Nederland 42. Today's forecast, mostly sunny with a slight chance of showers, high in the low 70s. Weekend along the Front Range is changing up a bit after Saturday. Saturday, there's a 20% chance of rain afternoon with high in the upper 60s. Saturday night, though, rain is turning to snow with possible accumulation overnight of 1 to 3 inches. And temperatures will have a low around 20 degrees. And then on Sunday, not much warmer, with a high in the upper 20s, with snow continuing throughout the day and into the night and through Monday. Sun night temperatures are going to be around 10 degrees. You're listening to KGNU. A lot of people are wondering what the world will look like after the COVID-19 pandemic. CU professor Benjamin Teitelbaum writes about some very traditional political forces that are looking to take advantage of the current situation in the latest Nation magazine. He tells KGNU's Maeve Conran that Steve Bannon is part of this movement.
So he has been up to a lot. I think the general public might be aware of the fact that after he left the White House, he at first parked himself at his old media outlet, Breitbart, and thereafter went out on a number of global campaigns to support nationalism around the world. So, you know, principally in Europe, through attempts to coordinate among various nationalist parties in Europe. But he also had been trying to pursue nationalism in Asia, supporting Taiwanese nationalism. And he also has been paid by anti-communist party of China operatives around the world to be working nonstop against the Communist Party of China, the CCP. And he's been doing all these things, but behind the scenes, he has also been coordinating with a group of men around the world who are also adherents to this very, very strange philosophy called traditionalism.
What exactly is traditionalism? Because, as I said, that's an ism that might not be as familiar to many people as some of the other things that are more familiar, certainly in the context of Steve Bannon, like nationalism. What is traditionalism?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question. And the tricky thing is it sounds like something we might think we know what it is, but I'm very, very little chance that we would have encountered it. It's philosophical, half spiritual, you could say. Movement or ideology. It's very, very difficult to characterize, and throughout most of its lifetime, it hasn't been a political ideology. It hasn't been a political ism. It strives to be the opposite of everything that we consider to be modern. It opposes modernity in so many different ways. It tries to push back against the notion of progress, the notion that something that comes tomorrow could have been better than something that already existed yesterday. It pushes against the notion of mass organization. It pushes against, in that respect, creation of nation states, ironically. It pushes against globalization, what it believes is modernity's tendency to homogenize the world, to bring everybody within one economic, cultural system. But at its core, it is a critique of materialism. It believes that modernity should in a way of thinking about society and politics and culture that valued quantity over quality. So masses of money, masses of body, and that manifest in democracy or in communism. And baked into that are some more familiar sounding religious critiques of the modern world, fornication, things of that nature, sexual impiety. Is certainly part of this, but it's not its core. It sees lust, sexual lust, alongside capitalism, alongside communism, alongside all politics that prioritize economic and material desires above the opposite, which for traditionalism is spirituality.
How does that tie into what we're seeing playing out here, say, in the US and certainly the rise of the far right that Steve Bannon was a major part of? Because some of what you've outlined there does seem at odds with the far right elements that
certainly
we're seeing here in the US.
They only agree up until a point, the far right and traditionalism. To get to the first part of your question, the other element of traditionalism that matters for politics is I mentioned that they don't believe in progress. They more specifically believe in cyclic time, a concept borrowed from a number of religious traditions, but especially the pre-monotheistic Indo-European traditions or Hinduism as well, which belongs in that category. So they think that we are always, every moment that goes by, things are getting worse and we're getting closer and closer to a cataclysmic fall or moment of destruction. Most traditionalists who are involved in politics, like Steve Bannon, think that the age we're living in right now, lo and behold, is right at the precipice of a major fall, a moment when this time cycle of decline and destruction and increasing materialization reaches a flashpoint, and we find ourselves back in a golden age in the past. And so for Bannon, he sees this both with the growth of globalization, with the intensifying materialism, with the fact that we have this, what he sees as a global capitalist system that can't respond to local needs, that is by definition global, and that you start to see around the world all of these dark upheavals. And the coronavirus is at the forefront of it right now. There's been an incredible burst of energy from these ideologues because of the coronavirus.
We've often seen in times of natural disasters or even unnatural disasters, certain ideologies, very much right-wing ideologies that are very much rooted in, say, capitalism, coming in and taking advantage of situations. I mean, we've seen that Hurricane Katrina. We saw what happened with the hurricane in Puerto Rico. And many people are very concerned about the potential for that to happen here with the COVID-19 pandemic. But the traditionalism that you're outlining, that's a whole other scope of you know, possibilities as well. What are you seeing in terms of the forces that, you know, democratic societies really need to pay attention to that are looking to capitalize, you know, for a variety of different reasons on the current pandemic?
Well, look at what is being potentially reinforced by the protective measures in response. These ideologues see that globalization, that interconnectedness, that the free movements of people are now being punished with death for the agents themselves or their families. And what they see as being rewarded in this new regime that we've found ourselves in around the globe is borders, is the reduction of actual contact with people, and it's potentially also the localization of production and consumption of goods. There are economic consequences to this, and what's worth pointing out and having a conversation about is, you know, to what extent are we going to emerge from this pandemic? Are we going to rally behind borders and the need to erect boundaries between ourselves and make them meaningful in all sorts of ways? That's certainly what these traditionalists are seeing. They're seeing that homogenization that they think of as a token of decline in modernism, they're seeing that again is being punished, and envisioning a world very much unlike the one that we live in, where borders are fortified. That's what I think people need to be having a conversation about.
How influential is this ideology? I mean, we're definitely seeing the rise of nationalism and far-right nationalism. I mean, just look at what's happened in Hungary, of course, Brazil, here in the US, and, you know, in so many other countries. You know, how influential is, say, traditionalism
as part
of that?
It's very hard to tell because its agents typically have informal power. But the countries you just mentioned, Maeve, Hungary, Brazil, the United States, add to that Russia, all of whom have strongman anti-liberal governments, let's say, in various forms, if we want to use soft language. All of them have had traditionalism around in some way, shape, or form, and virtually no commentators have paid attention to this. In the United States, it has been Steve Bannon, who was, of course, a campaign manager for Trump, an advisor to the White House, and he still is influential in informal ways in Washington. I can testify to that. I've been following him and interviewing him for almost 2 years now. In Brazil, arguably one of the most influential voices for President Bolsonaro is a man named Olavo de Carvalho, but he is the guru of the Bolsonaro regime. And he has not only been consulting with the president, but also helping successfully to choose and fill cabinet positions. He is a traditionalist, in some cases quite hardcore. In Hungary, not Viktor, his competing party, who Viktor Orban ended up taking a great number of points from their political platform from, Jobbik. Jobbik was officially traditionalist for a period of time. It had a traditionalist party leader and there too a guru figure who's a traditionalist. In Russia, is the most complicated case, and it's one I focus on a bit in my Nation article. There's a figure named Alexander Dugin, who has also never held an official position, but he has has been a media outlet, profoundly influential public intellectual, has met with Putin, but also has authored texts that have been kind of the mainstays for educating Russia's military elite for decades. He is a self-identifying traditionalist as well, and has been meeting with Bannon in secrecy. Did so in November 2018 to discuss specifically traditionalism and geopolitics. So you have all these figures. There's never been any moment like this in history that I'm aware of. In Mussolini's regime in Italy, there was an influential traditionalist named Julius Evola who was collaborating a little bit with Mussolini. But aside from that, there's never been a moment like the one we're in right now, where you have traditionalists in these informal positions of power in major, major global hotspots.
You've had incredible access, really, to these people. You've spoken with Steve Bannon personally many times over the last few years as you've really been following and paying attention to what he's been doing. How concerned are you about the rise of this? And because, you know, talking about all of these countries, Hungary, Brazil, of course, Russia, here in the US, these people are gaining, you know, significant amounts of political power, and they have political access. And you describe it so well that I think people need to be concerned about it. It's not necessarily formal political access, but it's very much informal political power. And when you see that, it's very much under people's radar, and certainly under the radar of a lot of political commentary and a lot of media. You know, how concerned are you, and how concerned should we be?
That's a wonderful question, Maven. It's very difficult to answer. In fact, I am concerned where we have seen tangible outcomes of this. I think it's Brazil, United States in particular, has actually been attacks on media and on expertise. One of traditionalism's core concepts is, of course, that as time goes on, things get worse. They're also skeptical to the notion that we could build up new knowledge about the world and that we could have experts who were trained today and know more than previous generations. It's one of the core conceptual frameworks for establishing expertise in the world today. Bannon, Olavo in Brazil, Dugin have all produced sort of counter and alternative media sources in different ways. And it's not a coincidence that they all have done this. Bannon has been successful at that through Cambridge Analytica, but especially through Breitbart and other means. Olavo in Brazil has made himself a social media phenomenon basically for terrorizing journalists and media. So that concerns me. That's a constant a constant drive of traditionalists. It accords in many ways with populism, but in this case, it has a sort of pseudo-spiritual background for it. That concerns me. We also have seen certainly a ratcheting up of confrontation with China, and it's somewhat difficult to explain briefly why some traditionalists oppose China. They don't all. But Brazil and in the United States, that has been the chief geopolitical cause of traditionalist influencers. And where that's headed, especially in the wake of this current crisis, is potentially concerning to me. But why it's also difficult to just give a blanket response of concern is that some of these traditionalists, like Steve Bannon, for example, they see and they look for social change at such a large level and such a broad timeline. I write about this in my book that Steve actually tried to get me to write op-eds in favor of Miriam Williamson. You may recall the Democratic presidential candidate. He was extremely excited about her and you know, people who he was speaking to, he was talking to her about her a lot. And this is because he saw in a lot of her rhetoric some commentary on issues that he cared about, that she was speaking about more than wonkishness, more than economics. She was talking about dark psychic forces and the currents of time. And he was, I think, seeing it through her, a potential fulfillment of his visions. What to make of that? It's very difficult. This is so far political politics that it's hard to sometimes form a concrete response to it other than just being baffled.
And that was Professor Benjamin Teitelbaum speaking about his latest article in the National Magazine that's called COVID-19 is the Crisis Radical Traditionalists Have Been Waiting For. Across the world, tens of thousands of people have come forward who want to help others survive the coronavirus pandemic. That includes Boulder's Charlie Cropley, a naturopathic physician and teacher who has been helping people improve their health since 1979. KGNU's Roz Brown says Cropley is passionate about encouraging people to use the current health crisis as an opportunity to make positive changes.
We don't need to quiver in isolation here. There's abundance that we can do, and when we do it, we stop being so scared.
Charlie Cropley has been a front-range practicing naturopath for more than four decades. Naturopathic medicine is a system that uses natural remedies to help the body heal itself. Cropley says a novel coronavirus called COVID-19 is no exception. He notes the coronavirus pandemic is now being called a war, but that implies we don't have control over how we're impacted.
Our present relationship, our cultural, conventional relationship with illness is that illness is an enemy, something to be feared, something to be fought against and destroyed. And it focuses outside ourselves on an enemy.
Cropley says there are four pillars of naturopathic medicine, the first being what we eat.
We transform our health by transforming the ways that we eat. How do we eat as a country? Horribly. Our food has been stolen from us and processed and sold back to us in ways that do nothing but make us sick. And then when we become sick, we are given pharmaceuticals because we're poisoning ourselves by the foods that we eat.
Cropley adds that movement or exercise is also inherent wisdom that allows the body to heal itself.
Movement is the second area. We are talking about a virus that attacks our lungs and creates an interstitial pneumonia. The lungs are healed by and can be strengthened through breathing exercises and also by the power of fresh air. The third area is the use of our minds, teaching people the power that we have to heal ourselves and focusing on ourselves and our own behaviors and using our minds to care for the suffering in our minds, the anxiety, the depression, the grief, the negative emotions that we feel. People can learn how to change their relationship to those, just like the relationship to illness in our physical body.
Social distancing has proven extremely effective in our current health crisis, but people across the globe have found ways to connect with loved ones on Skype, Zoom, email, or the old-fashioned telephone. He prefers to call the current situation distant socializing, which he says is more critical than most of us realize.
And the fourth area that is huge is that of community and of relationship and bringing ourselves together to be together and to talk with one another and be in communication about making these changes, what changes we're making in our own personal lives and our areas of eating, of moving, of thinking and relating, and helping one another to do those, because the work of healing ourselves comes down to the work of finding the ways that we are harming ourselves in each of these areas.
Cropley says it's important to know what we can know about the new virus, but we should also turn our attention to ourselves.
That's where the power is. We are making ourselves susceptible to things that we never would have been susceptible to before.
Cropley's new 14-day immunity course begins this Sunday, April 12th. Find out more at charliecropley.com. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
As we reported yesterday, residents of many Denver neighborhoods have been going outside every evening at 8 p.m. to howl at the moon in support of frontline medical workers. KGNU's Verity Matthews did just that in her Denver neighborhood last night.
Good evening. It is 7:59 in the Berkeley neighborhood in Northwest Denver, and we're going to see if the howlers come out again tonight. My name is Verity, and I work at KGNU Community Radio. Do you want to say a few words about why you're out here howling tonight?
Sure. Saying thank you to everyone who's out there helping to make this go away as soon as possible. Absolutely.
I'm out this evening talking with folks about why they're howling.
For our first responders.
For the first responders?
Yes, we're supposed to be blue and white. Make sure you holler.
All right, will do. Take good care. And with that, the neighbors retreat back into their houses, wish each other a good night. For KGNU, this is Verity Matthews.